Shall we get started, Mark?
Yeah, let's do it. So, Shashank, we got a lot to talk about today. So many things, so many things.
Not as much as last week's news explosion, but still quite an eventful week.
I don't know. I don't even know if I would say it's not as much as last week's. Oh, well, I mean, last week was ridiculous, but
Well, let's get into it. Let's hear it.
So, first topic, Stable Diffusion 3. That is out and announced.
Nice.
So that is an exciting one. So for those that don't know, Stable Diffusion is a image generation algorithm that you can use to just generate images. So this is the third one, and it's new and better. So it uses a new type of diffusion transformer, which is similar to Sora. Makes a bunch of improvements on Stable Diffusion too. None of that really matters. The most important thing is, how do the images look? Well, from what we can see by the Stable Diffusion launch, they look fantastic. I am excited to use it, and I applaud the open source community catching up to OpenAI, Google, Facebook, all these things. They are catching up, and they are surpassing in many ways. And I think that it's good that we have these models that we can rely on. So I really thank Stability AI for creating like open source models that we can use.
Yeah, this is interesting. I actually didn't hear about this until Mark just told me about it right now. To be honest, the pictures look great, but the previous version was pretty good too. So I'm trying to nitpick their announcement and see what is significantly different. And oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say one thing that I noticed is in their example images, they have a lot of text. And I
Text is a
think,
big one.
yeah, in Stable Diffusion 2, we didn't see it able to write, much text. Now, time will tell if like the text is actually legit, but in almost all of their images, they have text in it. So that is exciting.
Yeah, that's a good point. I know they had a couple different models to generate text. It wasn't in their main Stable Diffusion 2.0 version, but I do remember they had a couple different models for specifically for generating text. But it's awesome that they've integrated everything into one big model right now. And yeah, it seems like the Diffusion Transformer architecture is the one everyone's leaning into moving forward. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out, especially when they go into video generation.
Shashank, what do you know about that architecture? I don't know much about that.
Well, little to nothing.
Okay.
So from my understanding, we had two separate architectures for generating images. We had the diffusion model, which basically puts a bunch of noise on an image and tries to reverse engineer what kind of an image you're asking for based on the text prompt that you give it. So the transformer model, in contrast, is trying to predict the next word based on everything else it's seen in the past. So, I kind of understood how Sora uses that model because it uses a sequence of images to generate like the next image in the sequence, but in a single image, I'm not entirely sure how this works. Maybe it's something that they're building on to then give us video, like in the near future.
Could be. I mean, I feel like that's a logical advancement, right? I mean, you go from images to video, and then I think like after video, you have to go to 3D models after that. I mean, you don't have to, right? But I feel like that is gonna be another thing that we're gonna see, where we're gonna see like 3D models, animations, full video games at some point. Then after that, I don't really know what else you could like do. That seems like the end, like once you get like hyper realistic simulations that you can start creating. But I feel like images is just the first step, right? Because if you have 2D, you just add one more dimension.
And they had stable animation for a while. So it's something that they've been working on. And they had the same issues that everyone else did with coherence, where each frame of the video is radically different from the previous frame. So maybe this new transformer architecture will help their diffusion models to have some consistency. between the frames.
Yeah, that would make sense. Because, I mean, if you use transformers for generating things like ChatGPT, which are extremely coherent, this may help with coherency in images. So, yeah, it's exciting stuff. Next up, Gemini Advanced. So we talked like at length last week about Gemini and how it had like the 1 million context window, 1 million token context window. But this is different because, well, now I have access to it, and not like the 1 million context window one. I just have access to the, well, I actually don't know how big it is, but it's smaller than a million tokens that I have access to.
I think it's 128K.
Oh, 128,000? Okay. But I am incredibly impressed. So I've been this whole week using it with GPT-4, and I've been asking the same prompt for everything. I've been asking Gemini on one window and then GPT-4 on the other. And I am incredibly impressed with Gemini's results. I mean, I'm also impressed with GPT-4 results, but that was already good. With Gemini, I find that it seems like it's just as good, if not better, for almost all of the questions that I gave it. Now, for reference, I've given it mostly programming questions because that's the kind of questions that I had. And I think that it was significantly better a lot of times than GPT-4. Maybe not like way better, but like a little bit better. And that has been fantastic. And I would say just in general, the code that is given me is just a higher quality. So I don't know if they're training on Google's code or something like that, but the code I find like is code that I would want to run. Whereas like oftentimes with ChatGPT, it leaves something left to be desired.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think they're training on Google's production code. Cause I do know we have another model internally that at Google that is trained on proprietary code, and it can help you answer questions based on projects that you're working on that only uses Google internal infrastructure and tooling. But looking at some of the benchmarks for Gemini Ultra, which is what you're using through Gemini Advanced,
yeah,
that's comparable to GPT-4, but it's actually better at GPT-4 marginally by a few percentage points at almost all tasks, including coding, both human evaluation, Python generated code, and something called a natural to code. It's a, I guess, different data sets,
okay,
which have different tests that you can use to run benchmarks against. But the thing that it's not as good at by a significant, close to like 12 percentage points, is HelloSwag, which is common sense everyday reasoning tasks.
Well, that is important.
That is very important. I think that's what most people use these LLMs for. Just asking it a question the way you would ask a friend or like a family member. Very casual, very informal, generic questions. Asking, like, I don't know, how do I open this can of peanut butter that's stuck or something?
I feel like Gemini might be able to do that, okay? Maybe HelloSwag might be more like advanced questions, like, oh, like I have a friend who is like 12 years older than Sally, and Sally is like 14 years older than Bob. Like, you know, how old is their friend Chris, who is half the age of Bob or something? I would assume it's something like that, but who knows? I'll let you do some research as I continue to filibuster.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyways. Another thing that's interesting about Gemini Advanced is they just took out the ability to take pictures of people. It was a thing that they used to have. They could generate images of people, but it had some online backlash. So I guess there were some issues where people on Reddit asked it to create somebody like a soldier from World War II, and then it created like an Asian woman as like a soldier, and like a black man as like a soldier who probably wouldn't be represented as like German at the time. So there was some people who said that they may have turned the diversity filter a little bit high. anyways, it seems like a very sensitive topic, mm-hmm. But it seems like some people were upset about that. So I think Google is working on it, and they are trying to address the problem. And right now, I guess addressing it means that you can't generate any images of people whatsoever right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of unfortunate. But not surprising. I think Google is usually takes a safer stance when it comes to touchy subjects, especially political correctness. And it's kind of sad. I feel like this reduces the amount of features that is available to these models. But, you know, that doesn't seem like there's any winning here. If they're representing real world demographics and distributions, they're going to get chastised for it. And if they try to, like you said, up the diversity filter, then that's not right either. So it's a tough spot.
It is a really hard spot. Like the product managers in charge of that, good luck. I think you have a basically some impossible tasks.
I wonder what the Twitter LLM PMs are like. Probably have a free reign.
Could be. What is that one? Grok?
Yeah, it's Grok with a K.
But Shashank, you were telling me about like a Grok with a C. Like what's that one?
With a Q.
Oh, with a Q. That's right.
I think it comes from the etymology is like Old English or something to understand something. So you Grok something, you understand its meaning. But it's a new website. It's been getting a lot of traction on a lot of these websites that track performance and new models. So it's a way to run existing models really, really fast. So it was started by this guy called Jonathan something. He used to work at Google on the original TPU chips. These are Google's AI machine learning accelerated chips, which helped Google run machine learning workflows. I would assume a lot of Bard and Gemini was trained on these models, and also made its way onto the Google phones, which helped do AI features like some of the smart editing things in Google Photos. So this guy focused on what he calls the LPU, the language processing unit, to...
So
that we got a heard from the old Google LLM or smart assistant. So his basic premise was these models are very good at these GPUs today are very good at general purpose parallel computing, but for LLMs you need a lot of memory, and there's a lot of swapping in and out of the model's weights as it tries to keep everything in memory and generate the next token. But this new architecture is very focused on inference to generate tokens, not the model training part. I wonder if they just use a completely different architecture or they don't focus on that at all. 'Cause their website allows you to run pre-trained models that are open sourced for now, Mistral and Llama 2, and it runs really, really fast. So for context, my laptop, which is not the best example, it's an M1 MacBook Air, can run with GPU acceleration let's say, 7 billion Llama 2 model at 5 tokens a second.
But does your MacBook Air have a GPU in it?
It does.
Oh.
It has a 16 GB GPU, which can contain the entire model in memory, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. So 5 tokens a second. This one is 500 tokens a second. And I think it's running the 70 billion parameter model.
Wow.
So, 500
wow.
tokens a second. So it's like insanely fast. But that begs the question, are they just churning out more servers or, their equivalent of the GPU to run these things? Or how does it compare per dollar?
Yes, that is an excellent question. Because I mean, we could all use like an H100 if we have $50,000 burning a hole in our pocket. So yeah, do we have any idea on how much those new what do you call like language processing
Yeah,
units?
language processing
Yeah, how
units.
much do those language processing units cost?
You know, they're still very hush-hush and they haven't released any concrete numbers as far as I know. But we'll find out.
Is it possible to buy one?
I don't think so. I think it's only offered as a service through their website for now.
Oh, interesting. So basically, they're telling us they have a brand new piece of hardware that is leaps and bounds better than everything else. But do they have pictures?
Of
The new language processing unit.
I don't think so.
So there's no pictures. No evidence, no details. The only thing they have is an API that's really, really fast. They say is using the new architecture.
I mean, I believe they're doing something different. And from my understanding, the cost is comparable to NVIDIA GPUs, the cost of the hardware. I think they're doing something really unique here.
Okay. I mean, I'm excited, but I want to withhold judgment until we have more details about this. Because not to say it's not legit, because it feels legit. Like it seems very, very fast, but I don't know. I just, am somewhat skeptical about like the lack of details. And it could just be that they're trying to be protective of their intellectual property, which is fine. But like, I want to buy one. Well, I mean, depending on the price, right? But like, I think, I love the idea of having a GPU for inference or a language processing unit for inference that I can just, load up any model on, which sounds fantastic if I could have that running at home in a desktop. And until I can actually buy one, I'm not too excited because, I already can use a bunch of APIs. And I'm sure this one's a little bit faster, but right now, speed hasn't been my bottleneck. And I really want one for home use.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You mentioned speed hasn't been a bottleneck. So I was trying to think of what kind of use cases this 500 tokens a second would enable. Right now, I don't think you need something that responds that fast. I think if anything, this might open up the opportunity to have independent agents running in the background, doing some work, talking to each other, and then achieving some kind of a more complex, high-level task. And then, a couple hours later, they get back to you with their findings.
Yeah, I mean, I think that in general, faster is better, right? Like, if I can have the same quality and it's 10 times the speed or 100 times the speed, whatever it is, that's fantastic, right? And, I'm not going to complain about like an order of magnitude speed improvement. I think that just makes everything better, right? Like, if that means that I can get served a. So, you know how Google, when you go onto search, it says like, oh, this search query took like, 7 milliseconds or however long it takes, right? Like that's really cool, right? Like if every time I had to do a Google search and it took, 5 minutes to wait, that'd be too slow, right? I'm okay waiting a few seconds, but I think just like the faster it is, the more I'm gonna use it. And that actually enables it for things like autocomplete in like your email, where if I want to have it help me write my email, and if every time I made a keystroke, it had to query ChatGPT, that'd be far too slow, right? But if I could make every keystroke, if it could populate the rest of the email that I'm writing, that's fantastic. That would be actually usable as opposed to just like having to query it like every so often.
Yeah, that's a really good use case. A lot of the code editor companies were complaining about the inference times for autocomplete.
Yeah.
So your smart, fancy code editor powered by AI has a bunch of different features. Some of them you explicitly ask the LLM, hey, this is this my chunk of code, refactor it or find the bugs in this specific chunk. But the other use case is as you're typing, you're doing your for loop or whatever, and you start typing F O R, and then boom, it needs to be able to generate an autocomplete response really quickly, with the context of all the variables and things that you're working with, above the code that you're writing. And to generate that really quickly will be a big jump, I think. Because right now, you want to use the best model for everything. But if you're using GPT-4 for autocomplete, that's going to take way too long.
You know, that is very true. That is very true. So, all right, next topic.
Next topic, but along these lines, another way I guess you can speed up inference is just to use smaller models.
That's true.
And
yes.
So that brings me to something that I wanted to talk about. Google's new open source versions of Gemini, I guess. They call it Gemma.
Actually, I was going to bring that up too.
Perfect.
But you just had a better transition.
They released this, what was it, today or yesterday?
It was really recently. I think it may have been yesterday.
So I guess they're trying to keep up with Facebook in some ways. The Llama 2 models have just been really popular in the homebrew, open source, tinkerer community. And a lot of other companies are running with these open source models too, because you can't fine-tune GPT-4 as easily. So these smaller open source models, they have less restrictions, they're more easily modifiable, and they're free. You can run them locally. So Google released a couple different versions of Gemma, I believe. One was a really tiny 2 billion parameter model. Another one is 7 billion, which is a pretty standard size. I think that's like a good size to run on the average laptop on consumer hardware. And the cool thing about Gemma is they ran the standard performance benchmarks, and it performs better than Llama 2's 13 billion parameter model.
Wow.
So 7 billion Gemma is slightly better than the 13 billion Llama 2, which is just pretty cool.
That is impressive, because the Llama 2 model is pretty good. So
it's really good, yeah.
If this one you can just run on a laptop,
yeah.
That's exciting. I'm excited for the day when we can run this in the browser on a low, like a Raspberry Pi or something like that, that can give us equivalent results. I don't know if we'll get there, but that's what I want.
What do you think the implications of that are?
If we could run something like this on like a Raspberry Pi or on like, you know, my calculator.
What would you do with that?
Oh, man. I think there'd be a few things that I would probably do. One, I think that we would have completely offline smart assistants, potentially. So, like, you know, if you want to ask Siri or Google Assistant or, you know, whatever, a question, you need to be connected to the internet, except for some, you know, simple queries. But if you could run the entire thing locally, one, that would be... you know, something that a lot of people would feel more comfortable with privacy-wise, because they would want to not necessarily call like a main server, right? Because if you make a request and it goes to a server, some people don't feel comfortable with that. Regardless, I don't think that like any of the big companies are listening to individual people's conversations, but you know, some people just, you know, feel uncomfortable with that. And also, I think that, like, since you don't have to make a round-trip call to a server, that could speed things up as well.
Right? Unless you're using Grok.
well, but still, like, the speed of light is real. And depending on where that server is for Grok, like, even if it is 600 tokens per second, you now would have to go and still make, like, the round-trip request to wherever they have their, you know... language processing unit, and then get a response back. But here, you can do the completely locally. If you're
About that ping.
Yeah, exactly. And like, if you're off the grid too, like if your internet goes out, you can still control your smart home, which would be pretty cool. Also, you could use it for like locally on your own documents. Like you could do like a RAG, you wouldn't have to leverage anything else. You just run it on like your own hardware and get smart search. Like, so what is it called? Like on Mac, Spotlight, I think, where it's like the command space bar, where like that has like a big search bar in the middle that allows you to search throughout your computer. Mm-hmm. That could be a little mini LLM that could answer questions about like all the files and documents that you have on your computer, which would be pretty cool. It could maybe help you review your images. It could just help you get better autocomplete too. I think like autocomplete, that's going to be really slow if you ping a server every time as you type. So I think like the implications are huge, right? If you could get, it doesn't have to be the the highest quality model in the world. I don't think that you're going to get like the GPT-5 running on a Raspberry Pi, but you could probably get a better autocomplete and maybe some smart home stuff for like maybe really simple utterances just running completely locally.
Yeah, I can see OS manufacturers, Apple, Microsoft, Google, incorporating LLMs in the SDKs for these platforms, where you have access to maybe one, low-powered model, one maybe slightly more advanced to run on like higher-end devices, laptops, desktop workstations. And if you can expose that to developers, I think that'll be like pretty huge. I know Google's just announced that, I think a few weeks ago, and I heard Apple is also working on something similar, which makes perfect sense because all their devices have accelerated computing chips. It'll be exciting to see what developers do with on-device generative models.
Yeah, that is very exciting. You know, one thing they may be doing is they may take one of Andrei Karpathy's new courses. So we were speculating last week on what Andrei Karpathy is going to do when he leaves OpenAI. And we have an answer. Well, kind of. He created a new course. So if you guys want to learn how tokenization works under the hood, he created a 2-hour course on his YouTube going into the nitty-gritty details on how all of that works. That has a similar, feature parity with GPT-4's tokenization library. So, wow. Exciting stuff.
I wonder how often they change the tokenization libraries.
I don't think it's probably very often.
Yeah. I don't think that's an active area of research. Because you have, you have some representation of how you want to break down the English language or different language. Maybe where this might be important is to try to tokenize new forms of data, like for video, for example, with the OpenAI Sora announcement, they open sourced one part of what went into making Sora, and that was the tokenization. How they decided to break down a complex video into individual chunks, have some kind of a temporal element to connect those things over time. That was kind of interesting. Wonder if this is like a tutorial for people to understand this concept so they can take this tokenization idea and apply it to new domains.
That's a very good point. Yeah. I mean, because I think that this tutorial was only for text, but why can't it be other things? Or maybe you could convert like a video to some sort of textual representation and tokenize it that way. But I don't know if that'd be the ideal thing. Where, I mean, I guess anyways, if you converted any type of multimodal input, you would need to convert it to something, right? So text is like not a terrible thing to tokenize.
So how many courses does he have now? I remember him making a couple courses on how to build a transformer too, before he, I think this was when he was a Tesla still.
He has a lot. He has this whole course on his website called AI Zero to Hero.
Oh.
And if you watch it, he goes from the beginning where he says, oh yeah, you guys remember in your high school calculus course, the definition of the derivative. And then he derives back propagation from like the fundamental of the derivative in calculus. And then you could just continue watching all those videos, and then they end at building something like ChatGPT. So I think he has, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, eight videos in this course.
Nice.
Each one is about 2 hours long. So if you were really, really motivated, within one day, you could become an AI expert after watching all of those videos from first principle fundamentals.
Well, in certain domains. I'm looking at the course list right now. It seems very specific to certain architectures. I mean, this field of AI is so massive, and it keeps growing every year. The number of papers written have just exploded exponentially in the last few years. So massive, massive field, a lot of room for specialization. But he definitely has a lot of cool videos from, like you said, first principles.
Yeah, it is very cool. But when I say 24 hours, you could probably do this. In reality, I've watched some of those videos, and I think they, like, I watched one of them. Now, to be fair, I wasn't watching, like, all the time, but, you know, I would, like, watch a couple minutes, pause it, think about what he said, like, try out the code. I think it took me, like, a week to watch his 2 hour video.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. So, they're pretty dense videos, and unless you, like, actually are already an expert, you probably wouldn't be able to watch it at double speed. It's probably like 0.5 speed, and, you know, having to pause and restart it again.
Yeah, that sounds like my experience as a generalist software engineer. There were a lot of terms here that are coming from, like, the research side that took me a while to understand. So, yeah, 2 hour video is going to take you about a week.
Yes, yes, that's right. But, you know, with 8 videos, 9 videos, you could do it in maybe 2 months. Would be like probably like a reasonable time to go through all of them.
Yeah, then maybe build your own model.
That's right. Compete with, you could maybe you could be building the next GPT-5s. So anyways, I know we're running out of time, but one last thing that I wanted to mention is a story. And it's kind of a, I don't know, an existential thing that I'm probably not giving enough time to for 5 minutes, but last week, I went down to L.A. to visit my brother at school. He goes to school down in L.A. And I was talking with some of his fellow students about Sora, or I guess like his fellow classmates about the new Sora model. And now he's going to school for film, and a lot of students that he's with are doing like animation and film. And I asked, like, hey, what do you guys think about this? And a lot of them seemed actually like quite sad about the implications, because, you know, a lot of people have gone to school, they're trying to make their careers filmmaking, and they are like worried that the days of like animation and filmmaking and, you know, having like 800 people on the crew of a film, those days are numbered. And so, like, I guess my understanding is a lot of these big blockbuster films, they will have not one person for each camera, but they'll typically have like 3 people mm-hmm. on each camera. So, like, I guess they'll have like one person making sure like the camera is pointed in the right direction. We'll have another person focusing the camera to make sure that like it's focused, and they have somebody else doing something else.
I mean, maybe.
I have no idea. I was shocked that they would have so many people just like on one camera. And like, I don't know, like, to me, it feels like a lot of this stuff is going to be automated, and where you used to have like maybe 800 people for one of these blockbuster films. We did the math last week, and you might be able to get it down to like $1 per minute. So where you had so many people, maybe you'll just have a small team of like a director, maybe a couple actors. And with the aid of AI, we'll be having a lot more movies, but there'll be a lot less people working film. So I don't know exactly what like the future will bring. I think it will bring a lot of prosperity when it comes to, you know, more film for people to watch. But maybe the days of like Hollywood are potentially numbered. And that, in my mind, makes me a little bit sad that, you know, we will be potentially losing this career. But I am excited for all the new movies and independent filmmakers that it will enable.
Yeah. I mean, you can look at the growth of YouTube content. I think YouTube is the most popular media platform today. more than Netflix, more than traditional TV broadcast. And a lot, if not most of it, is from independent creators. And I think this will empower those independent creators to put out more content by themselves without having multiple hands. But I'm only saying this because I'm an outsider. If I was in the creative field, I would be getting like a huge wave of panic and existential dread. And I read this very poignant quote. It said, you know, no one really cares about technology taking away their jobs unless it comes for their job. And if you keep letting other people's jobs being taken away, one day it'll be your turn and there'll be no one left to defend you. It's a little bit of a scary future, but I think it's happening right now in front of our eyes. And people are trying to think of ways to adapt. If we think of any interesting ways, we'll let you know.
Yeah, that's true. So anyways, on that happy note, we are just out of time. So until next week, everybody. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.